So that led to future success.
Yeah, with... I had a number two with Little Texas called Life Goes On the next year. I don't even know if it's on there. Actually, it was a number one. It was on their greatest hits record. And then I went and wrote songs for a different company, and I had other songs get cut along the way. But I hit, I guess, a lot of the stars lined up for me in about 1999, 2000. I wrote a number of songs with a number of different people, and just everything panned out. And I'll tell you the stories of the songs because they're really interesting. The way songs get cut in Nashville are quite interesting. I wrote a song with a guy named Rick Farrell, first song that we'd ever written together. And I had a title for the song called Something Like That. And it was like, if we fell in love, it'd go something like that, like Bogey and Bacall or whatever. That was my idea. And Rick said, you know, I think if we write this song, it should be A Heart Don't Forget, something like that. And I thought, yeah, I said, yeah, that's good. I like that. And he said, I got this line about a barbecue stain on my white t-shirt. I've been wanting to put it in a song forever. And I said, well, let's write a story song about it. And I played piano. When I play piano, it sounds kind of like Randy Newman on steroids. And so I had this lick and I played it and we made up this little song and we played it for our song plugger and they just went out of their mind. They said, this song is just a smash. And we tried to get everybody in Nashville to cut that song. Diamond Rio said they had us rewrite the bridge. They wouldn't record the song. Missy had passed on it for Tim McGraw. Every other country act there was, it passed on the song. This happens a lot in Nashville, by the way. This is a song that ended up being the most performed song of the last decade. And everybody passed on it. My plugger gave it to James Stroud's assistant. And James Stroud was one of Tim McGraw's producers. It was Byron Gallimore and James Stroud. And James put it in his pocket, and they went in, they were cutting A Place in the Sun. And they were finished recording for the day, and James didn't really feel like they had the whole McGraw album. And he said, I've got this song that Allison thinks is a hit. Does anybody want to hear it? By the way, Allison works with Big Machine right now. She's the head of A&R, and I've known her forever. Allison Jones is her name now. And Tim says, put it on. So they put on the song, and it's my demo's playing, and Byron Gallimore goes, well, we've already passed on that song, because his wife had passed on the song.
What's the name of the song?
Something Like That. And his wife had passed on the song. And Tim McGraw goes, well, I like that song. And James goes, well, I like it too. But Byron got mad and left, the story I was told. Byron's never told me that. And they cut the song anyway. I got a call, and they said, you just got a Tim McGraw cut. And I said, wow, because like I hadn't had a cut that big in a long time. And I said, how did it happen? And nobody really knew how it happened. And then I heard from the record label, and they said, well, don't worry. It wasn't supposed to be on the record anyway, so it probably won't make the record. And so I kind of wrote it off, and I thought, I'm not going to get too excited about it. And then they debuted the Tim McGraw album live from New Orleans, and they played my song. And it sounded amazing. And I thought, boy, this sounds like a hit. The promotion man I knew at Curb said, well, don't worry about it. It wasn't stickered. It wasn't supposed to be on the record. It'll never be a single. Well, the first single was a Rodney Crowell song. And it was a great song. I can't think of the song. It was 6 weeks at number one. And this album, Tim McGraw is really hitting his prime right now. Yeah. They're telling me it's still not going to be a single. They were going to come with some Tequila Makes Her Cry or something song. I can't remember the name of the song. But radio liked Something Like That. And they started playing it. And every station in the United States started playing it. And when it got to number 28, Curb Records finally put an ad in Billboard and said, you want it, you got it, Something Like That. It went on to be 5 weeks at number one. Meanwhile, I'd gotten a song cut on Martina McBride that I'd written with my wife. And my wife had this great idea, and we wrote this song. And that's another story in itself. That song was on hold for almost a year, and Martina cut it four times. And she couldn't sing it right, because Martina's a belter, and it was a real poppy song. It's called I Love You. Ended up being in the movie Runaway Bride. It just wasn't her cup of tea. And the girl that sang it for me, Stephanie Bentley, is a tremendous singer. She actually wrote the song Breathe by Faith Hill. And she ended up singing all the backgrounds on another Faith Hill song that I wrote that I'll tell you about. But Steph's a great singer. And finally, to Martina's credit, she got it right. And I don't think they would have ever cut the song four times, except they already had it placed in Runaway Bride. And they knew it was a huge setup for her new album. And they didn't want to miss, you know, at that time, what's her name? What's the pretty girl that was? She was in Pretty Woman and she was in Runaway Bride. Julia Roberts, is that it? And I can't think of the name of the guy.
Richard Gere.
Richard Gere. Everything they did was golden. And so it was going to be in this movie. And so they didn't want to pass up on this opportunity. So finally, and I had heard one of the versions she did and it wasn't a hit. And finally she sang it like Stephanie sang it. And so as fate would have it, Something Like That's out, and I Love You comes out right after it. So Something Like That is number one for 5 weeks. And I got my wife at home just pissed off because I'm keeping her song at number two. And we wrote that song together too. And she said, you better not keep me out of number one. And ended up, I Love You became number one, and it lasted for 5 weeks. So I held the number one position for 10 weeks in a row with two different songs. And meanwhile, I get another cut on Faith Hill with a song called The Way You Love Me. And Stephanie sang that song too. This girl I just spoke about, Stephanie Bentley, who's one of my best friends, still to this day. She's like my sister. And Stephanie ended up with a record deal on CBS, but she was too stubborn to be a star. She ended up being a great writer. She had sung The Way You Love Me as well. And The Way You Love Me had all those weird little background answer parts on it. And I ran into Byron Gallimore at a party and he said, you know, Keith, how do you hear those background parts? How did you do those? And I said, I think they have to be just loud enough so that if you really listen, you can understand what they say. But if you make them too loud, they take away from the lead vocal. I said, they're more like an instrument than they are a voice. He said, well, who sang those parts? He said, I've tried like four different singers. I said, Stephanie Bentley. He said, can you give me her number? I gave him the number. Oh, no, he had her number. He knew who she was. So he called Steph to come in and do the backgrounds. And only Stephanie Bentley would do what happened that day. Stephanie's got balls. So, she walked in. She sang all the background parts, and he loved them. And she said, you know, Byron, she's from South Georgia. She's from Thomasville. She said, the record really sounds good, but that melody that Faith is singing, that's not the melody Keith wrote. She said, so I'll tell you what, I'll sing harmony to Faith on her melody, and then I'll sing the real melody to the song, and I'll sing harmony to that in case you can get Faith to sing the right melody. And Byron got her to come back and sing the right melody, and she sang the melody that I actually wrote to the song. It comes out, and it was 4 weeks at number one. And right after that, a song I wrote for Lone Star called Smile came out, and it was a number one. So I ended up with 15 weeks in a calendar year at number one, which I don't think I'm going to do again. I've had some other hits since then, but that was just the stars all lining up right.
That was what time period?
2000 and 2001. I ended up being ASCAP Writer of the Year, Billboard Songwriter of the Year. I wrote Country Song of the Year, and I got nominated for a Grammy. Didn't win, but got nominated.
Wow, those are pretty impressive achievements, Keith. So what have you been doing lately?
Well, I had other hits I wrote. He Was a Good Man by Emerson Drive. I wrote Looking for a Good Time by Lady Antebellum. I had a couple songs on their first record. One that they recorded for their second record that did not make the record, but Sarah Evans is recording right now and I think is going to come out. I wrote it with the guys in Lady A. And I love the song. It's called What If It's Love. I wrote a song with AC hit with Jim Brickman called Peace. And I've had a lot of songs. I write a lot of pop songs too. All those songs crossed over. The Way You Love Me was as big pop as it was country. So was I Love You. The Way You Love Me was top five in almost every country in the world. And I think it ended up being on 11 million albums. And so I've always written a lot of pop songs because it's kind of, I'm just one of those right in the middle guys. I like really poppy country or really really pop. I don't know how to explain it, but I guess I write what I write, but it only fits in certain places. As time went on, I had, I think, four or five other number ones around the world. I had one song that was 10 weeks at number one in Malaysia and the Philippines called The Way You Look at Me on an artist called Christian Batista. He won the American Idol show over there, and that he cut my song first. And I wrote songs with, who did Jennifer Lopez marry?
Mark Anthony.
I wrote a couple songs with Mark Anthony that I had that he recorded. And, you know, I didn't have any big hits, but I had songs on his records and stuff like that. And along the way, my kids started growing up and showed an interest in music. And my oldest son, Ryan, never really sang until he was 16. But at 16, he sang a song for my wife. He wouldn't sing for me at first. He'd always played guitar. She said, "You've got to hear this song." So she had a recording of it, and she played me the recording. And I said, "Gee, he shows a lot of talent for writing." I said, "I don't know if he's a singer-songwriter or a songwriter-singer." I couldn't tell. Anyway, so we started writing with him and teaching him what we knew about writing. And he wrote and he wrote and he started a little group, and we recorded him and we wrote songs with him. And different members went through the band, and we tried to make him a record deal. I got turned down by 8 different labels trying to make his band. They had different names, and they started out as Miracle Drug and ended up becoming Hot Shell Ray. And I think we'd been turned down by every major label that there was. And Jive Records heard about them through a song that actually my wife and I wrote with Ryan called Bleed. They heard that song, and the manager, Jonathan Danielson of Boys Like Girls, sent it to Barry Weiss and said that this is the best unsigned band in America. And they flew an A&R guy in that Friday at the Exit Inn and signed the band to a 5-album deal. They went on to put out Bleed, which ended up being top 30 in the United States, and they followed it up with Tonight Tonight, which I think was top 5 and number 1 Hot AC, and the group ended up winning the American Music Award for Best New Artist last year. And my oldest boy Ryan is the lead singer, and my youngest son Jamie is the drummer. So I have a musical family. We have the musical disease. I do have a daughter who's a wonderful basketball player. She just got her first call from East Tennessee today to talk about a scholarship. She played last week in front of 20 college scouts and went 7-for-10 from the 3-point line, and scored 34 points, and I think they noticed her.
So the musical tradition carries on in your family.
Yeah, my son writes all the Hot Shell Ray songs. I still write with my son. My wife writes with my son. But, you know, in the interest of being a good parent too, we really, you know, we don't push ourselves upon our children. We want them to fly on their own, and they write with whoever they write with. And if they want to work with us, great. We're happy to be involved. But, you know, it's about their career, not about our career. We've had a career, and we're still having a career.
Were your parents musical, either one?
Not at all. Nobody in my family's musical. My father loves music, tried to play piano the best way he could. Correspondence course. He's got fingers the size of, oh, they look like broomsticks. He was an electrician, and he had to put them almost sideways on the keyboard. But when my mom would have my dad babysit me, he'd put me up on top of this upright piano so I couldn't get down, and he'd play the piano. And I think I ended up musical because my mother was an Elvis Presley fanatic. She used to dress me up like Elvis Presley and take pictures of me, and I was on a parade acting like Elvis Presley, and the babysitters would always play 45s, and the record player ended up being my babysitter, and all I did was listen to music as a child. And I think you're just very impressionable at that age, and it just stuck in my head because literally no one else in my family anywhere plays any instrument or sings.
A lot of people try to be songwriters, and a few do, and a lot of them don't make it. What do you think it takes to be a successful songwriter?
Well, I think it takes a few things. I think it takes luck, for sure. I think it takes perseverance, almost more than anything. And I think you have to be good. I mean, I'm not saying I'm great or good or whatever, but when that door opens, when you get your chance to walk through it, if you haven't been practicing, if you haven't been woodshedding, if you haven't been... I write 100 songs a year still to this day. I've probably written 5,000 songs in my life. And I love it. I like it as much today as I did when I started. I get excited when I'm making up a song, and I still have the same energy for it. If you don't work really hard, you cannot be ready when that door opens. And that was always my thing. If I get the chance, I want to be ready. And I think you just have to work hard. I think you have to have a creative gift. I think not everybody can think of things to write about. I mean, you could put me right there and give me a guitar, and in 10 minutes I can make you up a song about something. But I will say that not everybody can do that. But a lot of people can do that. But how well can they craft it? How well can they throw away their second verse and rewrite it and make it better? And how do they, it becomes the craft of it, the art of it. And I study it and I work at it.
In your makeup today as a songwriter, is there still a connection inside of you that goes back to the Wailing Phantoms, the Enchanters, the Youngsters? Did that experience here in Minnesota result or have an impact on who you are today?
Oh, unquestionably. I mean, one thing we had in Minnesota, and all kids here have it, I think, or they did, I don't know if they still do, you guys will have to tell me because I don't live here anymore, but was a work ethic. And, you know, we practiced every day. My week was Sunday night, we would go set up the equipment, pick out the new songs we were going to learn that week. We'd practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday we'd practice, take down the equipment, we'd play Friday, Saturday, load it in on Sunday, and do the same thing week in and week out. I didn't care about high school. I didn't care about football games. I didn't care about anything but playing music. I was just obsessed. And I think all those early years playing in those bands and trying to be a good musician and learning all those great songs gave me a whole base to base myself on. And I was talking with Gary Lopak today, and a lot of the songs even that you mentioned there that I wrote, the melodies that I did then, they're not that much different now. I mean, I think the musical person was already in place. The melodies aren't that much different. I'm just better at words. I think I was totally formed here.
Keith, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today about your career as a songwriter.
Well, thank you for having me. I've been lucky to do this for a living.
The preceding interview was recorded on July 19th, 2012, at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Danny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MiniPawMusic.com.